the long-awaited promotion. And that's all we're going to choose to focus on here in the intro.
You're listening to the Selfie Is Godcast with Zach Meisel and TJ Zuppi.
Fly ball, deep right field. Back is Spencer at the one and track at the wall.
Subscribe to Selfie Is Godcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Unbelievable.
Zach, I know you're familiar with the story of the monkey's paw.
I certainly am after receiving about 85 tweets with it.
For those unfamiliar with it, you probably have heard of it by now because this is the most accurate description of this story that's ever been told. The story is you find the monkey's paw, you wish upon that paw, and you get your wish, but it comes with unintended consequences. And I would say this matches that to a T. You get your wish. Kyle Manzardo, according to our very own Zach Meisel, will join the team tomorrow. And why is he doing that? Because the guy that's been the most consistent hitter, we said in our most recent show, he might be the MVP of the team to this point. Stephen Kwan's going on the injured list, and we don't know to the full extent of what is happening there with the hamstring, but any amount of time without a guy that's been consistently your best bat is unfortunate. But you also get a guy that we've been begging and pleading for and trying to find ways to get him onto the roster for several weeks. You're going to get that guy. Man, talk about a day filled with so many different emotions. Oh, and we haven't even talked about that pretty good prospect. I have a feeling we're going to get there too. Hey, how you doing, Zach?
Hey, the Cavs.
The Cavs. How about that?
This is an encapsulation of Cleveland sports. There's never a dull moment. There are a lot of days where so many things happen at once. And yet there's still that urge to talk Browns. Now, where do we start? I mean, I have talked to people throughout the week and have come to the conclusion that, you know, I really do believe we don't spout things. I mean, sometimes we do spout things just to spout things. But I do think a lot of times, you know, we have informed speculation or educated guesses, or we think we have a good handle on things. I think we've had a really good handle on this. You know, it's not anything Manzardo hadn't done at AAA. It's has nothing to do with him. He came back from injury last summer, put the injury behind him, and thrived at AAA, in the Arizona Fall League, in spring training, and then has put up his best production ever at AAA this season and has looked awesome, especially over the last few weeks. So it has not anything to do with him aside from maybe the position he plays, the hand that he swings with. You know, if Mr. and Mrs. Manzardo could have just raised him as a righty, then maybe he would have been up sooner. But as we laid out last week, you know, this had more to do with roster construction. And I understand that nobody wants to hear that. The guy has been awesome. Get him up. I'm with you. But I think their hesitancy until now has been because of all the things we said. You know, who are you cutting? If it's Laureano, well, then you don't have enough right-handed bats. And while Laureano has not contributed much of anything, they still want that balance. And Manzardo doesn't play the outfield. So it's leaving you with an undesirable roster against left-handed pitching. And I know you're all yelling at me and saying, even with Manzardo in the lineup, it's still undesirable. I get it. I'm just thinking this is how they've approached this. That doesn't mean that they were never going to call him up, but Kwan going on the injured list gives them everyday at-bats to fill. And you can fill that with Manzardo because whoever you've been using at DH, you can stick in the outfield, whether it's Laureano, whether it's Florial. So this makes it easier, and it buys them time, and it makes it so that whenever Kwan is ready to come back, Manzardo doesn't have to go down. By then, you'll have enough time where
hopefully.
Yeah, or maybe you've learned about Florial, Laureano, maybe Brennan or Freeman or Arias or whoever needs a trip to AAA. So I under, like you even said, it's like, yeah, Manzardo, but not like this. But it does. This is the easiest way to make this happen, even if it's not the most preferred way.
Well, there's two things going on here. There's one, an evaluation feeling, and two, there's a, oh, you're in first place right now. You're trying to continue that. You're trying to hold off everybody else in the Central Division, which has done a tremendous job of putting pressure on you. We'll get to that coming
up,
too.
Best division in baseball.
We got a fully loaded show coming your way. Trust me, we'll get to it all. Maybe. You know how we usually roll. You can feel good, and I think the front office, to some extent, can feel good because they don't have to. The choice was made for them. They don't have to make a hard decision. They don't have to have a terrible conversation. They don't have to potentially kick somebody to the curb that maybe could have helped them later in the year. So from that standpoint, I think this front office loves that. There's always an element of, we don't have to make a choice. We can kick that can further down the road. Let's throw a party. Let's throw confetti, because we don't have to risk making the wrong call, because they have made the wrong call on some guys here in recent years where they've moved on from certain individuals and they've come back to haunt them. So I think any situation where they don't have to make a tough call, particularly for a guy like Florial, who he's pulling the Shawn Michaels move, like the kip up right before the super kick at first base after he gets knocked down.
I remember The Rock doing that a lot.
Right after the sharpshooter or the spine buster, he'd do you'd see that occasionally, sure. You don't have to run the risk of losing that guy with all that athleticism right now. But you are trying to win a division, and I think first and foremost, that's why it hurts. It hurts so much because Stephen Kwan has been so great, and you hate to put, even if it's a short-term thing, God, you hate to put anything in the way of him seemingly coming together to be so much more of a complete bat. There's an element of that here at play, too.
Yeah, and he's your catalyst, your table setter, the guy who has really fueled this lineup. And I think adding Manzardo's great. I mean, what he is capable of in terms of power, he had 9 home runs and 10 doubles in 29 games at AAA. That's a lot of extra base potential. And walks. This lineup, Jose Ramirez has not shown patience. When Josh Naylor has kind of gotten away from his approach, it's because he's chasing more, right? So have Manzardo in that lineup, a guy who's got good plate discipline, is willing to take walks. That can help. But there's no easy answer on how you replace Kwan. I think that's
I wanted the both things. I wanted to be greedy. I wanted to have Kwan doing what he's doing and then add that element of Manzardo, not hoping that one replaces the other and you just maintain even footing right now.
Which would be a blessing, because I think Kwan ranks 4th in the American League in WAR, leads in hits, leads in batting average, his strikeouts and walks are even though he didn't walk for like the first 3 weeks, and his strikeout rate was much higher than he's comfortable with for a few weeks, and now he hasn't struck out in like 70 plate appearances.
Oh, sorry. I don't need the microscope to see it now. I can actually see it with the naked eye.
Yeah.
So I think it was working just fine.
Yeah. So if you would have told me, hey, Kwan's going to go like 2 months without striking out, you'd have been like, oh my God, this guy has just found another level. Well, it might be because he's injured.
Oh my goodness. So you were in that room with Chris Antonetti. What was just the feeling? Sometimes you can get a read on
the feeling
how
is
the
that they're going to draft Charlie Condon number one.
Uh-oh.
I can't say you heard it here first, because I'm pretty sure Tom Hamilton's been talking it up on the air every day for 6 weeks.
Well, what about me and the rest of the Bazana bunch? We're not gonna like that too much.
No, although I would say that they have enough 5'9" middle infielders, but none of them have panned out, so I don't know.
But it could work this time. Could work this time. I think I'd be okay with many of the guys at the top of the draft. Okay, what was the mood?
This morning with Antonetti?
Yes. In the lunchroom right before the game. Yes, with Antonetti.
It was tense. The Cavs were starting.
Oh, my God.
No, in terms of Manzardo or Kwan?
I'm just, sometimes you know, because you've been in there so many times, you get a read of the room. At times there is a next man up, it's fine, we're going to roll with this. And then there have been times where you can sense just a heaviness or a sense of dread. So as he's in the room, is he using his jokes to deflect and distract? Or is it just because he's feeling okay still and he thinks they're going to be fine?
Well, they didn't have the MRI results yet at that time. And so he was his typical self, not saying a ton, but, you know, they're it's not like they haven't dealt with injuries this season. They were somehow collected and even keel went detailing Bieber's injury and nobody saw that coming. So, you know, I think this one hurts. It'll be interesting to see what the approach is. We'll learn a lot more tomorrow on how do you fill a leadoff spot? What is the musical chairs game look like in the outfield now? Where does Manzardo hit? Does he play against lefties? What does the first base DH allotment look like? Like, there's a lot of questions here, right? But I think that this team has thrived on this sort of thing. I kind of think that Stephen Kwan is, he might be like the last guy I'd want to lose if I'm this team right now. And yet at the same time, it's like, do you think that Jose and Josh Naylor are going to be like, woe is me and kicking themselves? You think Stephen Vogt's going to let them do that? They've done a really good job. And I guess at least in this case, you know, with Bieber, they don't really have reinforcements in the rotation. This organization's kind of done a 180 here where you lose Kwan, but like Manzardo's a pretty good consolation prize here. And then the pitching side, it was, okay, Bieber's out. But hey, Ben Lively's on the way. Well, that's, I mean, it's worked out well. I don't think anyone thought that at the time, though. So it's been a roller coaster day. I mean, it started with Chase DeLauder news. So it's been...
Oh, yeah. There's that, too.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Just one gut punch after another. And another guy that we had talked up that this year is going to feel a little bit different as it unfolds because it always felt like there are reinforcements on the way offensively. If you're not getting the answers you like, whether it's in the outfield, whether it's the Tyler Freeman experiment or Floriano or Floriano.
I like that.
Or that too.
Yeah.
That too. That might be your answer in with Kwan.
Like Dunder Mifflinfinity.
You had some other ways you could go, whether it was Manzardo, whether it was Brito at some point, whether it was Daniel Schneeman, whether it was Chase DeLauder. And now that you've taken that off the board for now. I don't know what the future is going to hold for that. Obviously, the team doesn't at this point either. But now you've gone from, well, later this summer, he might arrive to, I don't know, I guess I'd have to start planning for 2025 with him. Maybe that's the more likely outcome. But in the matter of just a few hours, you went from feeling not even that everything was fine, but you had some answers and you had some positive things going on. You took the best offensive thing off the board, and then you took one of your biggest late-season weapons that maybe you were hoping was going to settle into being able to help you if you needed it. And you took both of those things off the board immediately. Today. That was not cool.
there's been a lot of bad news this season, and the one thing that I think keeps everybody going is the standings. Like, what are they, 22-12 now? I mean, that's, can you imagine how things would be looking and what the tenor of this conversation would be if this team was the reverse?
Right.
And just judging by individual performances, as we've talked about, like, that wouldn't be, you would think there's a better chance that they're 12-22 than 22-12. But at least you're approaching this now with problem solving. How can they keep this going in spite of all this instead of, holy shit, everything is bleak?
I mean, to stress how important it is, the start that they got off to, the Minnesota Twins just won 12 games in a row. That came to an end today against Boston. They're 2.5 back. This early in the season, they won 12 games in a row. They're still 2.5 back of you. That is how impressive it was and important it was that they came out of the gate hot. Because everybody else is going to have a turn like that. Everybody else is going to catch fire outside of the White Sox, most likely. And so You hope that you build up enough of a cushion.
They might. I mean, like, and then you ride it. Might catch fire.
It is a
building
different sort of fire. You're hoping you just ride it until you catch your next hot wave. And so that's how important it was, because the baseball they played here, we didn't rip into them for how they played against Atlanta. But then you come off of another series where you drop 2 out of 3, and you were just, okay, get back home and hopefully take care of Los Angeles. And then when you lose that game 6-0 in the opener, and I know that maybe they were dealing just with some jet lag or whatever, you come back at 4 a.m. It's not that it takes the loss off the board or is an excuse, but it's also something, as I'm evaluating a season, I realize there are games like that baked into the schedule. But still, that doesn't make you feel better. You want to see better play. And then on top of that, Sunday unfolds the way that it does. And for most of that game, it's looking bleak, as you said, waiting for the offense to wake up. And thankfully, your two best hitters now, with your other guy off the board, did wake up later in that game. It does make you feel better.
Yeah, I mean, what you look like in April and May is not what is going to matter in October if you get there. You just got to get there, right? So you're in survival mode right now. You want to be building good habits as the season goes along so you can make informed decisions as you go and at the trade deadline. And then you're playing your best baseball going into the playoffs or going into your division race or whatever it is, right? So the key is you've weathered a lot of storms so far. How do you keep doing that? How do you make sure, like, it's great, get Manzardo up here now. Maybe he'll go through some growing pains at some point, but better to do that early. And the hope is you get Kwan back, and at some point in the near future, you have a functioning lineup with Kwan and Manzardo. And all of a sudden, that starts to look a lot more palatable, right? You go Kwan, Jimenez, Ramirez, Naylor, Manzardo. And then, you know, over time, does Bo Naylor figure it out? Does Brennan or Freeman? Like, you're one step closer. Now, with Kwan out, you're probably one step sideways. But at least you've laid the foundation.
At best.
Right. At least you've laid the foundation to take a step forward here. So it is survival mode. And I think it was important to everybody in that clubhouse. You know, Austin Hedges had a great way to say it, to frame it, where you don't want to lose games, but Houston and Atlanta, those are not easy places to play. And I know the Astros have not looked like the Astros so far, but it's a lot better to lose. You feel better about yourself and what your potential is when you're losing 4-3 in 11 innings in a hard-fought game against a really good team, especially on the road. Then when you come home, and even though you're jet-lagged, it's a 6-0 loss and you look flat and it's just sloppy and it doesn't sit right with you. So I thought it was important that they came back and won the next two against the Angels, who I think are like 3-25 in Cleveland in the last like 8 years, which is wild. That's a team you should beat. And now you've got to take advantage. You've got a lot of AL Central opponents coming up, starting with the Tigers. And this is where we're going to learn a lot about this team. You know, does the pitching hold up? Does Manzardo come in and look the part right away? And the big thing, and I think that maybe the key storyline, and we don't have to touch on it too much today, maybe we talk about it in terms of the Manzardo news, but I would say the next month or so is when you really need to feel confident in your evaluations and the decisions that they spur in guys like Florial, Laureano, Brennan, Freeman, Arias. Like, where are all these guys going? What are you doing with them? How do they fit? And how patient can you be? Because, you know, when Kwan comes back, and we'll know more Monday on what his timeline is, that's when someone finally goes. And maybe it's before that, you know, maybe they want Jonathan Rodriguez up here at some point. But it's like, yeah, you're going to have to start making some decisions. And I think now those guys will get a chance to play more often. Like, you'll probably see Florial in the outfield more. I know the organization's sort of split on him defensively, and, you know, in the pecking order, you don't need me to tell you, you can see it based on who's starting where every day, but he's behind a lot of guys in the outfield, including Gabriel Arias. So that tells you he better hit if he wants to keep his roster spot. And the results so far on that have been mixed. So there's just like, there's a lot to sort through. Kwan injury buys them some time. But, you know, as we're talking about, like, if this team wants to be a legitimate contender and you're trying to build good habits and you're trying to build a lineup, you know, I think you've got 1 through 5 down. But after that, like, it's all question marks. You know, who's going to stay and who's not? Who deserves to be here?
Well, I don't want to let it steal all the joy, because you should feel some joy. It's kind of how I feel about the hot start. If anyone ever tells you, well, it was against this team and it's early, you don't know how many times you get to feel joy in a given season, especially with a team like this with so many unproven guys, younger players, guys you're just not sure are ever going to come through. Don't let anybody steal any amount of joy that you ever get to feel, because there are going to be times.
That's good in life. There's going to
be times where you're not going to get to feel that. So if you spent your whole time when the baseball team that you follow was playing well saying, but the other shoe is going to drop and this isn't sustainable and they're playing bad teams, and you never got to experience any joy from that, and then the bad stuff comes, that's no good.
I mean, hey, like, credit to the Twins for winning 12 in a row, even if more than half of them were against the White Sox, I think. Like, what did you want them to do? Go 13-1 in that
stretch?
Well,
that's why it was silly when it was the other way around.
Let Dan Hayes hang his banner. Like, it's fine, man. They deserve it.
That's why everybody is fighting through injuries. So the Twins can say, we've lost this and we've lost this and we managed to win 12. Against the same sorts of teams that Cleveland did that early. That's why you say, good job, Cleveland. Good job, Minnesota. The division isn't over on April 20th or whatever. People were trying to indicate that you knew everything you needed to know. No, that's not the way that it ever is. So experience the joy when you get it. And in this case, there is still some joy that we get to experience, that fans get to experience, that the organization gets to experience with finally calling up Kyle Manzardo. And the good thing is, you know, how many times have we seen a guy might have a hot spring and then he goes to AAA, but he didn't make the roster, and then it's not so great coming out of the gate.
DeLauder.
DeLauder, sure. It's not so great. And so you get to a point a week, 2 weeks, a month into the season, you're looking for reinforcements and you say, well, what is that guy that we were looking at in spring training every single day? What has he been up to? And you look down there and he's got a 240 average, 103 WRC plus. And you're like, okay, well, I mean, I guess, but that's not really instilling a lot of confidence that he's going to come up here and succeed. And it's not to say just because Manzardo has been great at AAA that he's going to succeed at this level. We don't know that. I mean, he could be just coming naturally in the ebbs of flows of a baseball season. He could just be getting ready to experience the bottom part of that. And it's just going to coincide with when he gets into the major league level. All of that said, it makes you feel so much better that you need this guy right now. And he's going to hit the ground running. As far as the way that he's been swinging the bat, he's got a 149 WRC plus down in AAA. He's taking the walks. He's doing what you would expect, not striking out a ton. You get a little bit of strikeouts. Not like he's Jose Stephen Kwan sorts of levels of strikeouts here, but he's not a guy that's going to look like he's going to K 30% of the time. Then you look below the surface. This guy leads Columbus in expected weighted on base average. He's got a 410. That is, let's see, 20 points better than Daniel Schneemann.
Can you give our listeners just like, what do you want your expected weighted on base to be?
Usually, like the guys that are in league average territory, it's around 330. If you're doing 330, you're doing mostly okay from a process standpoint. And then everything beyond that, of course, is great. 410 is really, really good. The best effort that's ever happened in the history of the world, but very good. And then you're also looking, is he making quality contact? With a guy like him, you think, he could base everything off of a bunch of singles and walks, and is that really impactful hitting? He leads the team in barrels as well, which is your best contact you can have in terms of exit velocity and launch angle. You have a barrel, you have a great chance to have an extra base hit. So that's the way to think about it. And he's got 18 of them, 10 more than the next closest guy on the team. 18 barrels already for him. So he's barreling up the ball. The walks are there. It's not like you see guys that maybe are swinging the bat well, but they're doing it outside of themselves because they are seeing the ball well at that given point. No, his process is great. He hasn't sacrificed Ks to go chase barrels. He looks extremely healthy. This is the perfect time to get a glimpse finally of him in the major league level. We'll see what happens beyond this, but this is as good as you could ask for as far as timing goes.
Yeah, I mean, 19 extra base hits in 29 games is really encouraging. Because this is a guy who I think a lot of evaluators projected him as maybe like a, I don't want to say low average because like 230 is league average now, but like a, you know, someone who's going to hit 240, 250, but draw a bunch of walks and maybe draw so many walks that it's at the expense of being an aggressive enough hitter to rack up a bunch of extra base hits. So you heard like 20, 25 home run power with more doubles, and that's great. But I don't know. I wonder if, you know, I don't want to judge too much based on AAA, spring training, Arizona Fall League, and I am not a scout. But you have to be encouraged by the fact that, one, he was injured last year. Remember, he had a shoulder injury when he was traded, came off the injured list, and looked good right away. So how much was that affecting him? How much was that influencing evaluators' projections for him? And it feels like he's gotten better as he's gone. Like, he hasn't had, if he's had a slump, it's short. And so I just wonder if there's more in there. And you see him getting better. Like, his numbers at AAA are better than they were last year at AAA. Like, there's a lot of good stuff here. He's hitting lefties. And his mustache above replacement is, you know, exceptional.
Wade Boggsian. So I looked it up real quick. Minors expected weighted on base average, league average so far is 306. So 410 compared to 306. And I know AAA has been, as many minor league evaluators will tell you, has been a bear to try to figure out what the hell is happening down there. Nobody has enough pitching. And so you're seeing a lot of spectacular offensive numbers. But kind of along the lines of Cleveland and Minnesota.
Spectacularist.
He's, what do you want him to do? He's slaying a bunch of bad pitchers or great pitchers. He's slaying them regardless. And so I would rather that be the scenario than him scuffling at any given point, but right before the promotion.
These are small sample sizes. Very small. But slugging percentage against righties, 646. Slugging percentage against lefties, 630. That's a really good sign. You've seen him a few times in recent weeks muscle one off of a lefty the other way. That's a really good sign for a left-handed hitter. So, I mean, again, like, there was nothing he wasn't doing in AAA that was preventing him from getting called up. Like, it was, he was ready, and he's certainly ready now. And I will say also, like, you know, let's assume, like, there was no chance they were calling him up before they could get the extra year of service time, and that passed a couple of weeks ago. At least this is happening, and I know it's happening in spite of an injury, so I don't want to give them too much credit, but at least this is happening the first week of May, and we're not dragging this out till mid-June, having Super 2 conversations, and just yelling at the team, yelling at each other, getting yelled at by the fan base because why isn't this guy up? And we don't know. At least we get this over with earlier than usual.
You know what, this amount of credit you're giving them? This is the Michael Scott shaking the hand of his the old boss. This is...
Ed Truck?
Yeah, the Guardians just showing
rest
up.
In peace.
They have no decision that they can make other than just call up Manzard over there. Here they are. Yeah, we'll take the credit. Yeah, we did this.
They had a funeral for a bird after Ed Truck died.
Yeah.
Grief counseling. I think season 3, episode 4, maybe.
Well, we're not going to need that in terms of what Jose is doing, thankfully, because of one big knock over the fence there, and he needed that. The team needed that, certainly.
Did you see the way he threw his bat?
So I wanted to, I'm glad you brought that up. You remember going all the way back to whatever year that was where against the Twins, he had the bat flip. This is before his big breakout. So what is it, 2015, I believe?
I think so.
And he had the big bat flip in a game that Cleveland had, was already well in hand, and there was this conversation of he's showing up the Twins. And it's, sometimes you have to know what's happening in a player's, not their personal life necessarily, but professional life. What's happening on the field? And for Jose in that moment, he had a big hit, which was a really rough year for him before that big breakout in 16. And so it was not a I'm showing up the Twins bad flip. It was a I finally broke through bad flip. And today, it reminded me of that because it wasn't, I mean, it was a big home run. You needed it because you were trailing by one. All of a sudden, one swing later, you're up by one. But that flip was at least partially fueled by the oh for whatever slump he's been in and just this endless scuffle. And it's been a semi-alarming. You touched on the chase numbers, but those have just seemingly grown. And he has just looked incredibly frustrated and uncharacteristically lost at times at the plate. And so all of that comes together. Finally, a big base hit. And it's just like a, thank God, I'm going to throw that bat in the air to celebrate a little bit.
I love seeing that because it's a reminder that these guys are human. It's a reinforcement that like they know what they're going through too. And also that hitting is hard and it's frustrating and it is a game built on failure. And so when you do fail more often than you want to, it's really hard to pull yourself out of it. And I'm sure someone dealing with the struggles Jose is where he can still make contact. That's almost the issue here, is that he can chase pitches and make contact, and so it's weak contact, and it's not productive whatsoever, and you know, you're getting those pop-ups. But we have seen him chase some pitches that you can just tell it's, I'm so frustrated, I need a game where I go 3-for-4 to really snap out of this, and so he's trying too hard. All those cliches fit here, you know, trying to do too much and not staying within himself. That's all this is. And so I can only imagine that sense of relief. I mean, you saw from Bo Naylor a day earlier. He needed that grand slam. Like, that feels good. And it just lets you breathe. And I think even someone as talented as Jose, who, yeah, I think you would still bet that the numbers are going to look good at the end of the season, even if they aren't MVP caliber like that you were accustomed to seeing. You know, he feels it. And I just think that there is a snowball effect where it grows and it grows and it compounds and it makes it more difficult to break out of. And pitchers learn too. They know they can approach you a certain way. And if you're stuck in this rut, I don't know. Like what you need some pitcher who's like never read a scouting report to face.
Well, they know when you come up, they can get you out because you're going to get yourself out to a certain extent based on how a player is in a given moment.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And so I'll be curious to see, you know, what, I don't know if one home run is going to cause major changes, but like at some point, and like I thought we were seeing it a little bit this week. He drew a couple of walks in Houston, and but it's going to take time. He needs a day where he just gets like 3 singles. And then or a couple of singles and a couple of walks just to prove that he can both be patient and that's not going to take away from his rhythm and his timing.
Well, I mean, we've seen a big home run can also be fool's gold for someone that, hey, I'm doing everything fine. I don't need to change anything. And then you go another week and a half without having a big, meaningful base hit. What you do off of the success doesn't matter if you don't carry the positives of the process with you. We're going to see that too with Josh Naylor. And I want to focus just on both of these guys here because of their importance now that you don't have a Stephen Kwan. With Jose, we've seen him lose a little bit of the mojo here in the last week or so. That confidence swag that he carries himself with and is so infectious and fun to watch when it's going well.
That Scott Barlow tried to impersonate today after the game.
And really?
I warned him. I said, Dan Otero did that once and like, like dislocated. I don't remember if it was his shoulder, his hip.
Oh, okay. That's right. I forgot about it. I thought you were going to say you caught the ick just watching it, but all right, that's fine.
Is that what kids say these days?
That is what kids say these days. Luckily, and you're going to have this very soon where your kid is going to be informing you of what's cool.
He already does.
Dad, you're so cringe. Yeah, well, who wiped your ass? So let's get down to business here. Jose has the home run, but also we know for Jose, it's not just home runs that make him an impactful player. It's all the other stuff that he does too. And I thought it was equally important. He comes back in the next at bat instead of, well, I hit a home run, let's try to do something else big here. He lays off some close pitches, draws the walk, and then you're seeing that infectious Jose energy where he takes second base, the throw sails into center field, the helmet also goes tumbling into the outfield, he takes off for third base. That's what he does. We had a whole show about it a couple of weeks ago that he's the unicorn because he does all of these different things, and I thought for a guy that I would imagine anybody in his position would be feeling a little bit of that loss of that mojo that makes him. He regained a little bit late in that game of just that element of I'm gonna F some stuff up here late in this game, whether it's via the home run or whether it's going to be me running around the bases crazily.
Two things. I mean, I think a good sign is when he gets in one of those 10-pitch at-bats. And we've seen a couple now where those have ended in home runs. He hit the grand slam off Boston's Chase Anderson. Does that sound right? And then the home run today. But also, because that's when he's, like, his contact rate's so good that he could mount a 12-pitch at-bat against anyone, even if they're not throwing strikes. But it does show you that, like, he's on, especially when it ends the way it did. Like, he's just waiting for the one pitch that he can really inflict damage on, and he does it. Like, that's a great sign. The other thing is, I can notice when he's been slumping based on, you know, he loses his helmet today, and I go to find my most recent helmet tweet to tack on another one. I'm like, oh, my God, it's been a week. I think it was in Atlanta where he had 4-1 night. I think that was, I'm trying to remember what game that was. It might have been like the Saturday night. So, you know, it's been more than a week since he lost a helmet, which means it's been more than a week since, you know, he was getting on base and running amok and causing havoc. So
can I complain about something, though, to that extent?
Maybe.
I'm going to call you out. It's not really your fault, but it's semi your fault. I think the team, there was at one point when streaming was still early, the team would tweet out as soon as the minute the game was over, you'd get the tweet. The second the game was over, you'd get the tweet. And sometimes I'm at home streaming, fans are at home streaming, you don't know. You like, you're sitting there, bases are loaded, two outs, and then it's like, oh, they lost. And I haven't even seen the last pitch, and it ruins it because I'm getting the alerts on my phone. And there are times where I get the alert from you. He will be on first base. The guy on second base, they're down a run. And then I get an alert. Jose helmet counter goes up, and I'm thinking, oh, he doubled. He doubled. He tripled. He went to, maybe this is an inside the park, or he lost his helmet somewhere around first base. And then it's just like a casual ground out to first, and just the helmet did happen to fly off. Can we do something about, can you send out a tweet where it's like,
I'm gonna wait,
thumbs up or a thumbs down? Let me know that, yes, keep the counter rolling, but don't get too excited about what you're about to see.
That's like when Terry Francona was out with his health issues in 2020, and he lived downtown, and he was two blocks away from the ballpark, and he'd hear fireworks go off, but he would have no idea what that meant. I mean, you know, it's something good, but he didn't know exactly what.
Usually.
Yeah, that's true. There have been a couple instances where it's a mistake. And he's the manager of the team, and he doesn't know what the fireworks mean. Yeah, we can work something out there.
I'm half serious.
I mean, the other thing, like, there have been times where he loses his helmet just swinging. I mean, you could be waiting for him to hit a triple, but it's actually, no, he just fouled one back, but swung hard.
Yeah, he grounded into a double play, and he was hustling. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Meisel. Thank you for that.
The worst is there have been a lot this year. There is something going on with the helmet because he's at just a blistering pace. There have been a bunch of him diving back to first on a pickoff attempt, and usually in the past he hasn't lost his helmet on those, and this year there have been a handful. And so it's jacking up the counter a little bit.
Yeah. We've seen guys even on swings now recently. Maybe it's
Naylor
just because
all the time.
The violent swings that these guys take, always trying to unleash that ace swing. And good to see, in terms of mojo too, good to see Naylor just blister that lefty, former teammate, but blister the lefty in this case. how many times when he's going poorly, you see him take the swing and it's the ground ball to second base. And I can envision in my head the way that he rolls over and it's like a just a he's mad at himself. And it's the same. Like I can picture the way that he rolls over to second base and lumbers his way out of the box because he's so ticked off at himself at another chopper to the second baseman. And to see him come back, I mean, it's a bad week. This was for somebody that was unbelievably on fire just a week and a half ago. You have a bad week early in the season, it plummets everything, and I think it lingers with guys a little bit longer. But for him to just be able to round the bases, feel good, the fireworks going off for a positive reason, see him take that violent swing. And I love the, of course, anybody loves the majestic bombs, but the Nailer Screamers where it just cuts through the wind. It looks like a golf drive through the
air.
You
know that ball is whistling as it goes over the center fielder's head.
It has to be. Yeah, and Nailer Brothers back-to-back days, both of those guys needed that.
You know, he was really insightful after the game about keeping perspective and like understanding what matters when you're going through a slump. And I asked him, like, did you always have this sort of measured approach and mindset? And he said it's last year when he really learned the healthy approach to take. When he was struggling at the beginning of the season, he said, he was like, you know, I was carrying like a 180 average into May, something like that. And I remember writing about this and talking to the hitting coaches about this. And at the time, he couldn't hit lefties. But if you looked at his expected stats and his metrics, he was like literally rated as the unluckiest hitter in baseball. Now, that's not what he doesn't care. Like, he doesn't want to hear that. He's not going to be puffing out his chest in the clubhouse being like, yeah, I'm only hitting 180, but you see my expected wOBA? Uh-huh, take that. Like, that's, you're not going to do that. You don't want to hear that. You want to see it translate into results. You want to see it actually matter. And I think for him to do that, it's kind of like what we're talking about with Jose. It's like, you can't put so much pressure on yourself to snap out of it that it becomes impossible to do so. And he knew he had time on his side. It was May. Even with like the struggles over the last week to 10 days, it's no one's going to care what your numbers are in April and May or even June, as long as they look really good at the end of the season. So you have time to, again, like build good habits and prove who you actually are as a hitter. And I think that helped him sort of set in. Because that's the other thing, too, is even if you get scorching hot and that stuff evens out, pitchers are going to be smart enough to make adjustments and to find your weaknesses. So you're going to have to eventually turn your weaknesses into, if not a strength, just something you can survive with. And so for him, he knows pitchers are going to attack him by throwing junk low and away. And for a long time, he couldn't resist it. And for the first month of this season, he could. And that changed everything. Because if pitchers can't do that, he's strong enough and he's got a good enough contact ability that he can do damage on a lot of different things. So he got away from that for a little bit. Pitchers then will just do that over and over and over again. And you have to snap out of it. He said, I don't believe in slumps because it's in your power. Like, you're the one dictating this. So if pitchers are throwing you something you know you can't handle, it's up to you to just lay off. Easier said than done, of course.
He doesn't believe in slumps. And also, if you cover your eyes, the monster can't get you. You throw the covers over your head. Let's give some love to Carlos Carrasco, who we were tough on in one of our more recent episodes. But we also noted, you don't know how much longer you can afford to have him continue to pitch, not deep into games or just give up a boatload of runs. But also look at the schedule. And you knew at least one of the games coming up against the Angels could be a good matchup for him. And to his credit, he made it a good matchup. He was very good. You could not ask anything more from that guy. We said it's a little bit unfair because you're asking more of him than really you should be at this point in his career. But they don't have a choice. You don't have Bieber. You don't have Williams back yet. And so you are counting on him because he's a healthy arm. Good or not, I don't know. But Cal Quantrill's not walking back through the door. This is what you have. And whether it's the Angels or anybody, you needed this start today from him. And he gave you a good one. So props to him. I I'm always interested to see how he changes start to start. You know, he went with more of the slider today. So he was more slider sinker four seamer. And the changeup, which has been his primary pitch throughout most of this year, was actually like second to last, I believe, in terms of usage, just above a couple of sweepers, which I'm not even sure if they would be sweepers according to Carrasco. But great start for Cookie today.
You know, after Jose Ramirez hit his home run, he came back in the dugout, found Carrasco, and said, "I did that for you." And I think it's important if Carrasco's going to give you a start like that, you can't waste it. They're in such a weird spot. Like, Ben Lively is your ace? Is that what we're doing here? Is that right?
Unironically, the dude has been awesome.
Right. And it's amazing how one, maybe two starts can just completely reset a bullpen. This bullpen was dragging. And then you have, you know, you get in at 4 a.m. and you got to play the Angels, who had a day off. And you look up and now it's like, hey, they got to get some guys some work almost. And you should get Henches back, and Eli Morgan's not far off. So, you know, there are ebbs and flows to the season. And I think it's very important for the rotation to just, even if it's, you know, I think the main thing is you can't expect Carrasco to do that every time out. I still don't think you can expect Ben Lively to do that every time out, although to his credit, you could also say, why not? Because it's all he's done so far.
And I figured that dude out.
You're still trying to figure out what McKenzie can give you. We've talked about, like, Bybee and Allen have to be really mature sophomore year pitchers. But if you can just get a couple guys, or just get like one turn through the rotation, just to let the bullpen catch its breath, that makes such a difference. And you get a day like this where you can use three guys for one inning apiece, and maybe you don't have to use those three guys tomorrow, and like then everybody's on good footing. You know, you're pushing guys. Like, most guys in that bullpen had thrown 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 4 or back to back earlier in the week. So it was a lot. And then you're also just thinking, like, you have to push your starter more than you're comfortable with to spare the bullpen. Like, you don't want to get into those sort of thoughts if you don't have to.
Yeah, it's amazing that that hasn't ever happened. He's just, Vogt has really stuck to that thought that we need to protect our starters and go to the bullpen, even in times where they desperately need just a little bit more length. I mean, it would be easy to just say, I'll see if I can get 3 more batters out of my starter. But they really haven't done that too much.
It's all worked. I mean, it's amazing. And there are still questions about how sustainable the setup is. But the bullpen's been so good and should get healthier that, you know, I think they're in a better spot now than they were at the start of the week. I think that's the bottom line.
Sure.
And you've got another, when's their next off day? Like a week and a half, I think, until the next off day. So just the healthier you can keep those arms, the better, especially as you wait for Gavin Williams to come back, who you also don't want to treat as like, hey, man, you got to be the savior. Come rescue this rotation. So it's good. And you also, you know, like Xavion Curry will help at some point too, but you also know that if you were going to make a move and Carrasco had not pitched like someone who was deserving, you know, an extended look here either. It's just a matter of Curry was your only guy at AAA, really.
No,
you call
options.
Him up,
right?
Then what if someone gets hurt or if someone else is ineffective? So I don't know. Like Wes Parsons would be next, and he's not fully stretched out. So it's slim pickings right now.
Wasn't he the punchline of a joke recently? In the front office just got him. It's helpful when you have guys that you also weren't necessarily counting on sliding in to become 7th, 8th inning weapons. And I know Gattis had this rough stretch. I'll give him a little bit of a pass here because this is a man who's never realistically had to learn how to go back to back and 2 out of 3. And we'll see how he bounces back. It might have been a preemptive strike to say, aha, you've got your next eighth inning guy here in Gattis. But also at the same time, I think it would be silly to just look at, to throw all of that away and just say, well, he had some scuffles here recently. But the man who just continues to impress me, and it's going to look real nice to have two lethal lefties coming out of that bit, Tim Herron. My goodness. I mean, it doesn't even feel like – there were times last year it's just like, oh, my God. I don't even know if he's going to throw a strike in this outing. And he has come in and just seized it. And it is fun to watch that kid pitch right now.
It's funny because he's enormous. Yeah, what is he, like 6'7"? 6'8"? Like, I think he's bigger than Henches. And he's got this baby face, and he is such a soft talker. And he's such a nice guy. And then he gets on the mound, and he throws 97, and he's got two good secondary pitches. And it's like, wait, that's the same guy who is like the nice, quiet, soft talker who worked at Lululemon? Like, what? He's been great. And the flexibility a manager has when he has two lefties who can do those things is huge, because you could turn to somebody in the sixth inning knowing the next time you go through those tough lefties in the order, if it's the eighth, you've got the other guy. Like, that makes such a big difference. You don't have to just pick one spot and save that lefty for that one spot. You've got two. And if you have to burn Henches on back-to-back days, well, you've got Herron can step in and do what you wanted Henches to do, or vice versa. So it's really helpful. And then also it takes pressure off of, you know, if Gattis is struggling, you don't have to throw him in the eighth inning all the time. We saw Barlow kind of go through a rough patch and pitch in a couple games that weren't high leverage, and now he seems to be back where you want him. So they've done a nice job. I'll keep saying this. You know, the one everyone wants to talk about, Stephen Vogt, had no experience coming into this job. And sure, he was a player a year and a half ago. But he did have a year as a bullpen coach. And I know that he's not the one deciding who goes in when, but he is the one who is watching most closely as Scott Servais pulls all the levers with a really good bullpen in Seattle. So I think he learned a lot from that. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that this relief corps, even with injuries to Stefan and Karinchak, has, and Henches, has thrived so far.
Clearly, FIP is not a perfect statistic. It can be sometimes for evaluating a reliever, but even that, there are always going to be guys that it misses or overinflates, underinflates. So take that with a grain of salt. But every man in the bullpen, currently in there right now, so they've finally said goodbye to Tyler Beede. Thank you for the great outings early in the season, but now we're going to move on in a different direction, and that's warranted at this point. Every man that's currently in that bullpen has a FIP under 3.
Even Pedro Avila?
Every single, well, let's see, 3.45.
Peter Srzelecki?
Yes, he does. He's at 2.15.
Who I would think is the lowest guy to go for Henches?
The lowest reliever is Wes Parsons, 0.65. But no, Class A, 1.37. Cade Smith, 1.43. Strzelecki, as you said, 2.15. Tim Herron, 2.73. Hunter Gattis, 2.77. Nick Sandlin, who has saved their bacon a couple of times, 2.91. Mm-hmm. Even Eli Morgan, before getting moved out, 2.91. Ben Lively, Scott Barlow, 2.97. So, I mean, everybody in that bullpen is pulling their weight. I mean, you could not have asked for anything more from this group. It's truly incredible that they managed to lose a couple of important pieces in that bullpen, and they've been better than I would even imagine they would have been. That's credit to those guys.
Credit to Brad Goldberg, first-year bullpen coach and Cleveland native, who grew up rooting for those 90s teams. And all the random players who played for those teams. Like Jim Brower.
Goldberg. On opening day, wouldn't you have to just do the whole, the entrance with the sparks and the smoke?
Unfortunately, I'm like Bill Goldberg, I don't think. Brad Goldberg's team is going to go 183-0, or what was he before he finally lost? Who did he lose to? Was it Kevin Nash?
Was it Nash? Okay. More on the downfall of WCW next time. Patreon.com/SelbyIsGodcast. Click subscribe down there. Like. Find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Bye, Zach.
And Podbean.